How's ministering going in your ward? Good or bad, I think we can help you improve it. If you text the word LEAD to 474747, you'll receive a link to our free PDF called 5 Steps in Getting Your Ward Ministering. Again, text the word LEAD to 474747 to get the free PDF or visit leadingsaints.org/PDF. Hey everyone, this is the Leading Saints Podcast and I'm your host, Kurt Frankham. Now, if you are new to the Leading Saints Podcast, I welcome you. This is a podcast where we discuss all things leadership in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints so that lay leaders across the world can be better prepared to lead. And we have 300 plus episodes where we have together are accomplishing that. And you should go back and listen to many of those because they will change your life. Anyways, I also want to mention that I want you to just sort of file this away in the next few weeks so that you'll be prepared for it. But we're actually putting together another virtual summit. A virtual summit is basically a conference that you attend online from the comforts of your home. And we've actually done two in the past, one about motivation called Motivating Saints. And then we did one about teaching called Teaching Saints. And in March, next month, we are releasing our third one called Questioning Saints. And this one will be all about all things for lay leaders to better be prepared to help those that maybe are questioning some of their core beliefs of the gospel, you know, whether we categorize it as faith crisis or doubt or individuals that are just wrestling with their faith. And there's a lot of content so that we can all be Relief Society presidents, bishops, Elders Quorum presidents that are better prepared to be more empathetic and understanding and have the tools and right approaches to help those individuals. So I will be announcing that in the next few weeks as far as the details of how to access that information and or that summit. And so the best way to keep in the know when it comes to those things, if you go to leadingsaints.org/subscribe, be part of our newsletter, and that way you'll get it right in your inbox knowing when that will happen. Now, I want to tell you about this fantastic interview that you're about to listen to with Rosie Card. And Rosie, you may be familiar as she is an author, a business owner, and a podcaster like myself. She wrote a book called The Model Mormon, which you might have seen in a Deseret Book. And you can order, obviously, where any books are available. Amazon's a good place to look as well. And then she runs QNOR, which is a temple dress company where she does really modern, fashionable temple dresses, which we talk about in this interview. And she runs a podcast called QMore, which I've actually had the opportunity to be on. And we are going to put in the show notes that interview where I am featured. And it was a fantastic discussion. And so I had to return the favor and ask Rosie Card to come in and be on the Leading Saints podcast. We have a phenomenal discussion. And it's just sort of a casual. A lot of times, you know, I'll probably say some things that you disagree with. Rosie may say some things you disagree with. But nonetheless, I think it's a worth the discussion about understanding how we can better approach the young single adult wards. And I know many leaders that listen to this podcast are YSA leaders, right? And they're striving to really lead in that context where they may be 20 years older than the average person that goes to their ward. And so a lot of dynamics there. It's almost a whole different world of leadership, as many people know who have served as a family ward bishop and then maybe gone into a YSA bishopric. And so we discussed that. A lot of good points. And I think you will benefit from this discussion. So here's my interview with Rosie Card. Today, I get to sit down with Rosie Card. Did I say that right?
Nailed it.
Is that your full name? Is it your full name like
Rosemary?
Rosemary, right?
Yeah.
But you go by Rosie.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
For the most part.
And what does the listening audience need to know about Rosie? They probably already maybe know some things about
you. I don't know. What do they need to know about me? I'm from Salt Lake mostly. Uh-huh. Lived in New York for a few years. I have a temple dress company called QNOR and a podcast called QMore. I'm also the author of a book called Model Mormon. And yeah, I mean, for the purpose of this episode, uh-huh. I'm 39 years old and I'm single. So I've been doing YSA wards for a while. I'm in a family ward right now. And yeah.
We were just discussing that you actually live in the stake where I was in the stake presidency there. And so you get to hang around cool people like President Newbert and
wonderful
others.
People.
Yeah, yes. It's a great, great place in the valley for sure. So obviously you have when you were in New York, it was because of a modeling career, right?
Correct.
And that was your dream always.
You know what? Actually, it wasn't. So to be correct, my family, we lived in New York for my mom's schooling when I was 8 to 12. And then I moved back to New York when I was 16 to 18. to be a model. And it was something that people had said to me a lot because I'm tall and skinny, but it was never something that I aspired to or that my parents were like trying to push me towards. It just was ultimately like a way out of high school. I really hated high school. Mm-hmm. And so I figured out like, oh, this could get me out of here. And so it was a kind of my ticket out,
yeah, right.
Which I don't suggest running away from problems. So, nice.
And so what was the impetus of writing this book, Model Mormon?
So my publisher reached out to me and had they heard a bit of my story and they said, would you be interested in writing a book? And I had thought about that for a long time. And so I said, absolutely. And so Model Mormon talks about my experiences through middle school and high school and as a model dealing with body issues, and I think just a lot of issues that are really common to women. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I talk about my experience as like a single woman in the church, dealing with doubts and questions and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So, yeah.
Nice. And then that, did the dress company come from your background in modeling then?
You know, the dress my Temple Dress Company just kind of, I've always wanted to start a business. It was just an idea that I had randomly. I was working at the church at the time in the film department. And I just thought somebody needs to make temple dresses that feel more familiar to all of these young women who are going to the temple for mm-hmm. the first time. And so I started doing my research and just frankly Googled how to start a clothing company and I went for it. And so, yes, I have a benefit in that I've worked a little bit in the fashion industry, mm-hmm. but I had like no experience in manufacturing or anything like that. Yeah. But I felt very comfortable with the design element and the style element and yeah. that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And so do you design most of the rest yourselves?
Yeah, I design okay. everything myself. And then it's manufactured in California.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And it makes me think, you know, just as far as temple styles, like there's always the, you know, as far as men go, there's always the guy in like the old jumpsuit. and you're yeah. like, wow, that's a great jumpsuit. Like, is that legal? Can we do that?
Every dude that I talk to always says, bring back the jumpsuit. And honestly, there's a real part of me that wants to bring it back for the guys because right. it would be amazing.
It's like I can go to the temple and be in an adult onesie, right? And
yeah, just, like footy
polyester,
pajamas.
Just zip that thing up and go into the
pull section. The collar down and yeah. have a little optional nice. Belt.
And so there are some equivalents of dresses that maybe compare to the old school jumpsuit mm-hmm. that you want to do push aside and let's bring some comfort and style into the temple experience.
I just feel like we are all so different and there is something for everyone. And for a lot of years, I felt like temple dresses were mostly designed for one specific style. Yeah. And I remember trying on my first temple dress with my mom nearly 10 years ago and being like, what is going on here? And she was like, it's just the way it is. Like, it's not a big deal. And I always say, I do not believe the temple is about fashion, but I do believe that there is something about being comfortable in what you're wearing so that you can forget about it. And when young women are going to the temple for the first time, whether they're about to get married or just going because or for a mission, there are some things that they could be nervous about. You know what I mean? Like they're new things that they haven't seen before. And that can be, it can take a lot out of you. You do not need to be worried about your dress.
Yeah.
So
sure.
I just think let's just check that one off the list of things to worry about. Don't worry about it. And then you can focus on things that matter more.
Yeah. And I think especially for those new, younger people that are attending the temple for the first time, mm-hmm. you're already going to be putting on temple clothing that's completely you know, unfamiliar. So you might as well start with something that's a little more familiar.
Totally. I think the last, you don't need to also be like, and I'm also in a pioneer dress. So I feel super weird. You know, you can be like, but I love this dress and I feel really comfortable and I can get used to the rest of this.
Cool. So where did the idea for the podcast come from, the Q-More podcast?
So as my company grew, it's now a little over 3 years old, I started getting more and more messages through social media and emails from women my age roughly saying like, hey, I have questions about this, or like, I just read this in church history, or, you know, this is really bothering me that the church is doing this. And I, for a lot of them, was like, amen, like, I feel you. It's weird. Or I don't get that either. Or yeah, that is discouraging. And I feel really blessed because I just have a great network of people around me who I can have these conversations with about tricky things in church history or church culture really openly without being afraid that someone's going to be labeling me as a doubter or like a I don't know, someone who's trying to tear down the youth of the church or something, you know? And those conversations were so beneficial for me. And I've always thought, like, man, I wish more people had access to this guy or this woman who has been really a blessing to me. And so my friend Lee Hale and I decided we should just make a podcast where we have these conversations and then kind of broadcast them for people to benefit from and hopefully share with others and to further the conversation and start conversations. I got a really sweet message from a girl today, and she said that she and her mother, we have an episode on Heavenly Mother. And that she and her mother, or that she listened to it, and it really touched her heart, and she shared it with her mom. And then it started this like beautiful conversation with her mom about Heavenly Mother. And then she said last month, her mom passed away really suddenly.
Oh my goodness, wow.
So heartbreaking. But she was saying, like, I'm so grateful that I have this memory of this beautiful conversation about Heavenly Mother with my mother. And so she was just thanking us. And I just think, like, that's the kind of stuff that we're shooting for.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's what I appreciate about your podcast, because there's other podcasts which is not a bad idea, where they're very intellectual or academic, where, you know, they bring on the PhD or the professor, and then they break down this question, and they almost come to like a conclusion. And so that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Where yours is more like conversation starters. Your point isn't to come to a, and, you know, to give them an answer, but to get different perspectives and at least have the conversation.
Yeah. We say, like, we are not here to give an answer. We are here just to like start conversations and give ideas and thoughts, because a lot of these things, like, there is no answer. And that's maybe something we need to get more comfortable with, is that sometimes the answer is a non-answer, but that doesn't mean that we can't talk about it and then we can't like seek revelation or strive to better understand.
Yeah. I often give the advice to leaders, because often leaders want to be, you know, the bishop that has all the answers, opens the scriptures to that verse that clears out all doubt.
Boom, yep. I solved it.
There it is. Mic drop, you know, you know, come back in 2 weeks and let me know if you're okay. But, but I often give them the advice that it's not so much about the answer as it is about the conversation.
Yeah.
If we can have the conversation, that most people are going to be so appreciative of that, even if you don't know the answer, whether there is an answer or not. Right. And you're accomplishing that.
And I found that a lot of times people just like, they just want to be, feel like they're not the only one, you know, like when they come and like, this is really hurtful to me. They're not so much looking for, well, this is why it happened and this is why you need to be okay with it. Mostly they're just looking for like, amen. Like, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
And then they can come to their own answer, and they, and that's really just between them and their heavenly parents. But it's just nice to have another person say like, I feel ya.
Yeah.
That's really hard.
And from a leadership standpoint, you know, I'm always, as I've done different interviews, and it comes down to maybe giving the leader, or the leader should take a moment to step back and say, you know, why isn't my Sunday school class on Sunday have that feeling where people can kind of say, well, I got this question. And the other person says, amen. You know, like I've been wondering that too. Let's talk about it, and feel okay with, you know, well, we don't have a clear answer, but man, it felt good to talk about it amongst these, these brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah. And the first Come Follow Me lesson is something titled like Your Own Responsibility or something. In the teacher's manual of that lesson, Elder Bednar has a really great quote that essentially says like, an answer given by a leader is often forgotten. An answer given by God will change, like will change a person. And so the leader's responsibility, or a teacher in this case's responsibility, is to encourage people to turn to God.
Yeah.
Because sure, your leader could spot off some answer, but that's not actually going to change that person.
You can never outdo the voice of the Spirit whispering to somebody with further direction or guidance rather than, you know, coming from the bishop, right?
Yeah.
Or the Relief Society president, or in a lesson or whatever it is. So, and we got to plug the podcast, the episode I was on. That was about, what do you remember what episode it was? It was about the leadership. When do we know when a prophet speaking is a prophet?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So I think it was the one right after the Heavenly Mother one. But nonetheless, go check it out. And
Q.more.
Perfect. And people can subscribe the same way that they listen to this one.
Yeah.
It's out there.
It's all out
and,
there.
And everybody season two is coming up.
Yes. Right? So we are about to start fundraising for our season two. And we are hoping to have episodes out this spring. Yeah.
And you have a whole list of questions, I would imagine, from listeners.
Yeah, right? So the way that it works is people send in their questions. They record a little voice memo and send it in. And so, yeah, we have a whole email full of them.
Nice. Any, and is there any specific question that you're sort of chomping at the bit or excited to explore?
Yeah. One that we are working on right now is like, when, how do people who leave the church want to be treated? Hmm. And how should we treat those people, especially like when a spouse leaves? So,
yeah. And there's a mixed faith marriage happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's, it can be heartbreaking in the sense that you just see these people not sure, you know, what's life look like after,
totally,
after this. And cool. Well, so stay tuned for season two.
Yeah.
It's coming, and subscribe.
It's coming up. Yeah, it's going to be great.
So the main focus I want to have for this discussion is you've had a thorough young single adult experience.
Yes.
Right. You've gone the rounds with different wards. I'm sure you've experienced wards in New York.
Yep.
As opposed to here in the Salt Lake Valley, in traditional Utah culture. Mm-hmm. Anywhere else that you've...
I served my mission in Arizona and served in some YSA wards, but I think Mesa's like kind of a mini Utah, so not that diverse. Right.
And that's just Southern Utah in some extent. So
yeah.
And I appreciate it. And I've had a few of these interviews where I just sit down with a YSA member and say, all right, just give it to us straight. You know, we're... You know, I've never had a chance to serve in leadership in a YSA ward. Obviously, I had YSA experience myself, but I think a lot of leaders, it's a very unique calling for these leaders that they kind of get pulled out of their home ward. They get placed here, which is, you know, they get experience the energy of more youthful individuals, mm-hmm. And, you know, see them progress through a very exciting time of life. And they think, well, what worked for me is I got married and we're going to, you know, see if we can get these people married. Cause that's what this is all about, right?
That's what Mormons do.
That's what we do. That's the next hoop that you got to jump through.
Yeah.
So I had you maybe think about two or three things that just perspectives that you've had throughout your experience. And maybe there's some anecdotes and examples that you can share with us. But you first talked about just getting away from making the purpose all about marriage and dating.
Yeah. Right?
What comes to mind?
Well, I just think, and I first want to say, we're so grateful for the leadership that comes and serves in singles wards. Like, I get that, of course, everyone is so sweet and always says like what a blessing it is and how much they love it. But, and I think especially for the wives, like it could be a little like, okay, now I'm none of my friends are here, you know? And like, it's an adjustment. And so we're grateful for that. Or we're grateful for the leadership that is willing to do that. I think that sometimes in, I've had different bishops who have been all over the scale on this one, but sometimes there's this feeling of like, we've got to get these people married so they can come out and be with the rest of us, you know? like, are you ready to act like a real member? Great. Let's get you married and come out and play. Or just that they feel like a lot of stress that like my purpose is to help these people get married. And I just think it's so important to remember that like no one's purpose is to get married. That's not why we come to this earth. Our purpose is to become like Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Is marriage a tool that God uses for a lot of his children to help them become like Christ? Absolutely. But it's not the tool that he uses for everyone. And so it's important for single members to realize that, because if you think your purpose is to get married, a lot of people are going to feel really disappointed and feel like no matter what I do, I'm failing, or I'm a second class citizen in this church. And I don't want any bishoprics to feel like, oh, we didn't have that many marriages. We failed. No, our purpose is to become like Jesus Christ. And the more that church is focused on that, the better. I'm not saying like never talk about dating, never talk about marriage. Like those things are important. But when it becomes like the overarching theme, like the members of the ward can feel that. And I don't know anyone that's really drawn to that kind of pressure. If anything, it's like, I want to go there less now.
Yeah.
But if it's about Jesus, then that's going to draw everyone, of course. Yeah. So that is just something that's felt really important.
So what does that look like? I mean, it's a lot of dating lessons or undertones of marriage and all the sacrament meeting talks. Or what are some examples of, because I think a lot of leaders, they almost do it. There's a lot of times they do it intentionally, but sometimes they're just unintentionally that's the message that comes across.
Yeah. I mean, there's the obvious like third Sunday or fifth Sunday, whatever it is, like we're all coming together and we're talking about this and you boys, you're being lazy and blah, 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 and that, I mean, I could go on about that. I think that is so sad when those comments are made. And but then I think often it's just like the frequent joke or reference where it kind of feels like the leadership thinks that they need to remind us that we're single. It's like, oh, I actually forgot. Remember every night. Trust me. Like we haven't forgotten. And it's very important to us. Like, I would say that most people would really like to find someone that they could be in a loving, safe, healthy relationship with. You don't need to pressure anyone into that. Like, we want that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the frequent joke, it kind of makes it feel like, clearly, it feels like this person is uncomfortable that with our singleness. And mm-hmm. so like, we got to joke about it to make it like funny yeah. or like to relieve pressure. And it's kind of like, we're okay with it. Or yeah. we're on some level comfortable. Like, are you comfortable with it?
Yeah. And those jokes may sound like, you know, oh, you're going on a date this weekend or, you know, mm-hmm. hey, there's some girls across the hall there. You know, why don't you go chat with them or get to know them better, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like or this, just like two people standing in the hall like, hey, you guys look good next to each other.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, oh, I hated that moment. Like, please never do that again. You know?
That's so true. So, I can totally see
so
this just
cringy.
Kind teddy bear bishop saying that. When
so like well-meaning.
Right.
Like so well-meaning, but also it's just like, well, now it's going to be awkward every single time I meet with my co-chair. You know? Like, cool.
Because I guess we look good together and there's maybe we should go on a date or no. Right.
Yeah.
Nice. And so what about, I mean, obviously, it seems especially you've experienced the BYU. You went to BYU, right?
Yeah.
So you've even experienced the BYU, YSA, mm-hmm. Where it's, and I guess this is typical in a lot of single adult wards where like every semester there's the chastity talk, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know, that can't be in the handbook, but it seems like.
There's so many things that cannot be in the handbook. Yeah. I mean, I think just like weighed out like, how often in a family ward are you having lessons about sex uh-huh. and like healthy sexual relationships?
Never.
So, and like, maybe we should be.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. In my
not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Knowing some, like maybe we should be. So I'm just thinking like, maybe we need to be more mindful of like how much that's out of balance.
Yeah.
Are we talking about a principle like again and again and again and again that we actually never talk about to married people? Then maybe that we might need to balance that out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, I mean, do you feel like they're even necessary, like to have that poignant, like chastity lesson? Sometimes for youth, I mean, let's get the ground rules here for youth.
Yeah.
But for young single adults, I mean, everybody gets it. I mean, nobody,
I mean,
I don't know.
You
what
hope.
Do you,
but
you
like,
hope, yeah.
But I feel like if a bishop is like, whoa, my ward is really struggling with this. Like, I want to have a lesson on it. I say, great. But I also would say, be ready to rumble. Like, do be in the sense of like, I've sat through so many chastity lessons where things are like, you're tiptoeing around things or you are using terms that it's like, what are you really saying? Like, it just says, like, we're all adults. Like, you can just be straightforward. So I think if we're going to have a chastity lesson, just be ready to be really straightforward because the YSAs or the single adults are willing and I think often really want to ask really straightforward questions on those topics. But if you aren't ready to, like, give straightforward answers or if that's going to make you uncomfortable, then I think, like, that's just, it's not fair.
Yeah. Or bring
or
in a
beneficial.
Professional at that point. I mean,
yeah.
a therapist or somebody who can really
totally.
Directly answer those, right? It doesn't have to be the bishop that does those. And I see this trend both in not just YSAs, but even in traditional wards where there is, the bishop has all these appointments. And from his perspective, like, wow, I've seen like four people about pornography this week. Like, this is a problem in the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next fifth Sunday, it's all about pornography. And half the room is sort of like, oh, we're here again, like talking about pornography, which
right.
needs to be addressed and there needs to be resources and dialogue around that. But sometimes the bishop leads out with what he's seeing in his office, feeling like, well, I got to talk about this generally, when sometimes I don't necessarily think talking generally is always the answer.
Interesting. Yeah.
yeah. Another thing with that is, and this is, these are thoughts I've had as I've, again, I've never served as in leadership in a YSA, but and another way that they sort of perpetuate this is the family home evenings on Monday where they do sort of these, not, sometimes it is directly like speed dating.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it's like, okay, we're going to do sugar cookie decorating and you know, hey, maybe you can
chalk drawing.
Chalk drawing. I mean, you go on and on about the activities we've seen, right? And and it's really like, because from the leadership standpoint, I assume they're thinking we need to get the men and the women in the room, get them socializing, and maybe one or two of them will get married at the end of the spring or something, right?
Yeah.
So what's your perspective on all this as far as family home, the FHE goes on Monday nights?
Yeah, I think activities are great. I do think it's important to remember that no one is less of a member or less active if they aren't going to activities. If they're there for people who want them or feel like they're benefiting from them, but I don't think there's something that we should pressure people into. That being said, I think we're very used to activities for the youth. And then when we get to the YSA age, we're like, we'll just keep doing those activities, like a scavenger hunt or decorating cookies. Or often I just kind of step back and I think like, oh my heck, if we took like a random sampling of people in their mid to late 20s from Missouri and they saw all of us doing these like photo scavenger hunt.
What happened?
Like, what's going on with these adults? Why are they acting like children? And I think it's this common thing that happens is that sometimes we treat single members as children and that somehow they're less mature or they're less capable of waking up at a normal hour. All of these things that just kind of make people feel like kids.
Yeah.
And some people want that and they look forward to those activities. And I'm not convinced that's something we want to encourage. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if we should be encouraging 25-year-olds to act like 15-year-olds. So I think activities are great. And the last singles ward I was in, we made a real effort to like, okay, what are like age appropriate activities? Like we should be volunteering at like a elementary school in need, or what's something that we gathering all of our professional expertise, what's something that we can do to actually benefit the community rather than the 8 millionth photo scavenger hunt, you know what I mean? Or like game night, stuff like that, which are all harmless. And I'm not saying they're bad.
Right. They're going to happen and they're going to happen. Sure.
But I'm just like, I think it's something to remember that like single members are not less valuable. They're not less mature. I always say that like, as a single person, I'm pretty much convinced I'm learning the same lessons as my married peers. Mm-hmm. We're just learning from different textbooks.
Yeah.
So I think if I were a mother, I would be learning like hard work, patience, sacrifice. As a single person, I'm learning hard work, patience, sacrifice. Mm,
that's a great.
Like
point.
We're learning all the same things. We're just going about it differently.
You know, I was, I get a lot of emails and as I meet people and do interviews, people say, oh, you got to talk with this bishop and that bishop. And I don't know if this bishop is a legend or not real, but I've heard, I think he's in Utah County somewhere, and this is, I mean, he's not a bishop anymore, but he talked about that he approached family home evenings, you know, FHE activities and activities in general, they always let out with service projects.
Cool.
And he thought, you know, as far as if you looked at the statistics of his wards and marriages, like they were off the charts with marriages, because his approach was, if I get these individuals serving together like Christ, mm-hmm. right, becoming more like Christ, mm-hmm. like these relationships will organically form. But if we try and do these cute activities where we sort of force these relationships to happen, that we won't
date happen. Box stuff. Have you heard about that?
Date box?
Oh my gosh.
Expound on the date box.
To everyone within the sound of my voice, if your ward is doing this, stop it right now.
Okay.
It's this idea where they, and of course someone's going to say like, I got married from a date box.
Yeah.
There's a box where people can like write down on a piece of paper someone that they want to be set up with. And then there's a calling within the ward where they then call and like set these people up.
Really?
Or the piece or the dating coordinator in the ward will just decide on people to set up and call.
Okay, wait. There's a dating coordinator.
There's
That's a
lot
call.
Of made up callings and that is one
well,
of
sure,
them.
Right.
And so
not a good idea as far as the date coordinator.
So one time I was getting called to a dating committee calling and I just said, I try to never say no to callings, but I am absolutely saying no to this because I don't think this is a real calling. And this is not something that I can get behind. I get that like sometimes people might need help, but I just think that's not something that we want to encourage. Mm-hmm. Do we want to encourage dating? Yes, but we want to encourage men and women to be confident enough to go and ask themselves. If someone is not able to initiate asking someone out on a date that they want, I'm not feeling really confident in that first date. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you got to be able to talk to the person. So if someone feels nervous about that, I just think like, so let's solve that problem. Let's work on that rather than like providing a crutch.
Yeah.
So like stuff like don't do the date box.
I've never heard that before. I've heard a lot of things, but that is, wow, that's quite, you're really trying to force some things there.
Yeah. Or like sometimes the date box, well, I've seen on Twitter in the form of like, you get a call and they say like, you're going out on a, this date is happening between you and this person. And it's kind of like, well, I didn't consent to this. And also like, now I feel guilty. Like, did this person already say yes? And it's a church thing.
Will they see me at church?
Is it okay to say no to someone from church? Like, is this kind of like a calling to a talk? Like, it's weird.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I'm learning so much about the date box. Okay. So going back to activities in general, I remember just to give it an example, my sister-in-law served as Relief Society president in a YSA ward. And she was sort of frustrated with the cute activity FHEs. And so since she was called as Relief Society president, I was like, okay, I've got a little, leverage here.
Yeah.
And she started pushing for like, just more like intellectually focused, I don't know the right word for it, but where people would come gather on almost have like a fireside approach where, you know, this interesting person is going to come and tell their story. Totally. And she even invited me to, and I did an interview, which is on the podcast with Steve Shields and his wife, Kayla, as they talked about his experience with addiction and how they went through it, their marriage and came out of it. And I mean, the place was packed. People got asked questions and they talked about it for weeks and weeks because it was like this, you know, it was an activity for adults. It was like a fireside thing where people could come and learn and ask questions. And sure, there's, you know, some cookies and punch in the back.
Yeah.
But, and that worked out great, you know, where you see that a lot of these people are in college. They're very, you know, intellectually minded, mature minds, like let's feed that mind with some interesting things, some perspectives.
Yeah. I think one great ward council that I was in once, we just said like, who is in our network? Like if we took everyone on the ward, like who do we have in this network? And we made this list of like really incredible people that we wanted to learn from. And we built activities around those people and we learned a lot. And we had like one activity was how to buy a home.
Wow, that's great.
And then like within 6 months, like 10-ish people in the ward bought their own homes.
Wow.
And it was awesome. And so stuff like that, that's like what could actually help us all develop and grow rather than just kind of like something to do.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, very pragmatic approach of, I mean, most of these people are at a stage where they could buy a home, but just bringing in a guy to answer some questions.
Mid to late 20s. Yeah. And this was like 2-3 years ago. Interest rates were great. You know, like the guy was basically like, you should all be buying homes. Like if you can meet these different standards, like you should. And I mean, that's when I bought my home after that. Like it was great.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Great idea. You alluded to this a little bit, but this concept of respect that can obviously any YSA bishop is not like they mean to disrespect the patrons of their ward by any means, but when did you see this where you almost felt unintentionally disrespected?
I have a couple of stories in mind, and I will just say, like, I don't think any of the people involved in these stories were at all trying to be disrespectful.
Right, right.
I think especially some of them, like, I love these people. I think this is just like a common problem that we have within the culture of the church sometimes. And so it's just something that things can be said without really realizing what we're really saying. One example, or I'll give two examples. The first would be at a ward council. They were introducing an activity style that they were going to do with the men from one ward were going to meet with the women of another and kind of do like these exchanges, which is great. That's fine.
And
actually helpful, like good to meet people from outside of your immediate area. And in this ward in particular, most people were at least about 25. That was probably the younger age. And then up to 31 and some a little bit older, you know, you get a few stragglers. And the high councilman kind of like spoke up and he said, and there will be adult supervision. And we all just kind of like turned their heads and we were like, right, because we are all 25 and up. Like we all can supervise ourselves. And so that was one that was just like, oh gosh, like you think we're little kids that we're going to try to be like making out in the bathroom, which if they want to do that, they're adults. They can do that. And they're doing that anyways. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. They don't need to be at the church to do that. Right. Yeah.
And another example would be I was in a ward that we shared a building with a family ward. And you know, it's standard that every year you rotate times. And we had the 2 o'clock hour which is like the church time.
This was during 3 hours
death.
Church, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So church ended at 5 and your day is just gone. And we hadn't rotated in like 3 years. And so it was starting to become the new year time. And everyone was like, hey, is there any chance that we can rotate? Like, can we at least like overlap? Do we have to be completely like an hour in between? Like, can we switch this up? And we were told, you are guests in this building and you should act accordingly.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, guests? Like, if anything, if this is the Lord's house, like, we're all guests, but like,
and we're all paying 10%, right?
I'm pretty sure we're all paying the same 10%. And like, just because I don't have a ring on my finger, I'm a guest.
Yeah.
I'm somehow less of a member. Again, I know it was like well-intentioned and I don't think it was meant to be offensive, but it just felt like, okay, like, yeah. I see that I am somehow less a contributing member in this situation. So I think it's stuff like that, that it just is, and you know, the standard, like we talked about earlier, like referring to the YSAs as kids.
Yeah.
We're not kids.
Yeah.
Like, I am old enough to have a plethora of kids. Like, I'm not a kid.
Yeah.
I get to someone, to a baby boomer, I might be a kid, but it's just like, you don't go around calling the men in your ward boys. Mm-hmm. So don't call the YSAs in your ward kids.
Yeah. And I think it's very typical that, you know, a YSA bishopric and their wives, a lot of them had probably served in the youth program before this calling. And it's easy to sort of shift back into that gear because there's an obvious, you know, gap as far as age. And so you sort of shift that, you know, you seem older, but we're still different. And so you can unintentionally and with the best intentions, they sort of shifted in that gear of I'm a youth leader.
Yeah.
Just on a greater scale.
Yeah. Right? I think maybe something that would be helpful would be to just consider like, okay, this person that I'm talking to is 28 years old, let's say. When I was 28, I was married and had 3 kids. You know, maybe this bishop is thinking. And so just think like, how would I want to be treated? How was I treated at 28 as a dad and a husband by my fellow ward members? That's the exact same way I should treat this 28-year-old, even though he's not married and even though he doesn't have kids, he still is totally capable and doing important things with his life and working hard. We're not just like hanging out and like waiting for life to start. Like, our lives have started and we are working hard on our purpose and becoming more like Jesus Christ. It just is, it looks different than how they may have done it.
Yeah. You know, I've met several 25-year-old bishops. I was a 28-year-old bishop, you know, and so to look at them and be like, not only are they old enough to be an adult, like they could even have my calling and do it just fine, you know?
Yeah.
So, and another dynamic I see and have heard about is this dynamic of when I served as a bishop in a traditional family ward, I had a Relief Society president, obviously, that I worked with. But that dynamic with us was different than what a student ward or young single adult ward, where the bishop is a, you know, maybe a baby boomer and the Relief Society president's 26.
Yeah.
And so it's easy for the bishop to sort of not offload as much as maybe I offloaded to my Relief Society or take them as seriously as that. But to just realize like, no, like give them autonomy to act in their calling, right?
And if anything, and be an adult. We are more capable because we strictly have more time.
Right. Yeah. That's
interesting. And I want to be careful in the way because I think there's sometimes like we still are busy and we still are filling our lives. But a 26-year-old single Relief Society president has more time than a 26-year-old married with 3 children Relief Society president. So like we are capable. And I am always one to kind of say like maybe we should get rid of singles wards because I think like that would be such a benefit. Like I think if you had this influx of members in your ward who had different types of schedules and abilities and resources that they could like, especially for the youth program, like really kick in and really help.
Yeah. And I'm on the same train as far as, you know, we've had a lot of announcements that I never thought would have happened, but they've happened.
Yeah.
And to me, I really feel like, and maybe it was the fact that I was a younger bishop and because it blessed my life so much to interact in a traditional family ward and then be given opportunities to serve in those capacities. Obviously, I was married at the time, but I really feel like just saying, because there's, you can't get past the dynamic of, well, we're all single and we all know the game here is we got to get married.
Right.
Like you almost, you can't wash that out of the culture. unless you just dissolve it and then invite everybody into to a family ward, and you can still meet people, right?
Yeah.
You still have single activities.
You can still have single activities. Yeah. And I hear people say like, well, as a single person, you wouldn't be able to have the same leadership responsibility. And I just say, why?
Right.
Why? If I could be a great Sunday school teacher or Relief Society president or whatever in a singles ward, why could I not do that in a married ward? And if anything, like I said earlier, like I could be a great resource. And I started going to a family ward a little over a year ago, and it has been awesome for me. I just got to a point where my bishop that I had worked really closely with, and he was getting released, and I just felt like I'm ready for church to be about church and Jesus. And so I was moving to a new area, and I decided to just start going to the family ward. And it's so great to like know people in my neighborhood again, and like listen to people from different age groups and different perspectives. And it's been awesome.
Yeah. And on that note, like, I feel like the fact that I was called as a bishop at 28, and you'll know this because you're in the stake, like a lot of people hear that and they think, oh, you're something special, you know, wow, that they called you as the bishop. But literally, like, the list was like two people, and the other guy was like moving in six months, because it was such a transient area, inner city ward, that there, you know, we had a condominium complex and three apartment complexes. The list wasn't long with these old high priests. And so they had to turn to a 28-year-old Kurt Frankum and call him. And it was like one of the biggest blessings of my life that I was given that responsibility early on. And now I'm 36 and I'm a much better member because I had those experiences at 28 and later in the state presidency. And now I show up and I look at my bishop who's, you know, older and not old, but
he's old, a good dude.
but I can approach him with much more empathy and understanding because I had those opportunities. So with that, I hope that, you know, if people like you show up, you know, the singles show up in the wards, like, don't just put them in a category and say, well, you can have these type of callings, but, you know, put them in Relief Society presidencies, call them in as a Relief Society president, put them in the bishopric. You know, obviously a single won't be called as a bishop.
Well,
but
I will say,
while
working at the church, there was a single bishop in Oakland.
What?
He was a convert of like 3 years. We interviewed
him. You've
got to
connect me.
Can you believe that?
Oh, wow. And so it does happen.
It does happen.
All right. Well, I'm sure it's a
single dude, Oakland, California.
I remember as a stake presidency, we'd submit names of, you know, in the stake, there's just younger bishops. And so we'd submit names of 26, 27, and they'd come back like, no, they've got to be like 29 or something. Like, well, no, this is all we got. Like, and so we'd really have to push. So that one was definitely, so people had to sign off. So I got to get more information about
this
guy.
That's amazing.
So,
I'll tell you.
So anyways, I think, going back to the discussion of, you know, dissolving singles wards, and again, it's not our prerogative, or they're not calling us. I mean, if the church office
is
listening, like, just pass this note up, because I just feel like it would unify the church in a different way, and it would get rid of this stigma and the dynamic of, well, you go to this ward so you can get married.
Well, and YSAs are dropping like flies. Mm. Like, that is no secret.
Amen. Yeah.
Our group is dropping, we're dropping like flies. And so I think part of that is like, YSA wards are very transient. Like, you can go to one ward 1 week, go to another, and people are bouncing around because there's this like, got to meet someone type of thing going on. And when I started going to my family ward, I was there for a couple weeks and then I was gone and I was doing my normal bouncing around thing. And then they were like, where are you? And I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot what this feels like. Like, they care that I'm there.
Yeah.
Well, where I had not felt that in so long. Mm. And so I think, like, clearly some things not working. And it would be really great if these YSAs were surrounded by people with insight and years and experience and people who cared about them, and people to notice like, huh, haven't seen him in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Rather than like, huh, he's probably at some ward. He's probably started dating someone. Like, people to check it up on you.
And that's great. I don't think that's any critique of like the YSA bishoprics, because there's so many people coming and going, and it could be like, you know, I haven't seen so-and-so in a while. And one person could just say, oh, I hear they're dating somebody and about to get married. And be like, oh, okay. And then out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah, totally.
And that person's
It's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
Like, there is no, I don't think there's really a way you can solve that. And I think that it should be okay for people to go to different wards, and that's another topic. But like, even my bishop now, like, I put in a call to him and I was like, hey, I'm not this active. Like, I am not now, but like previously, I'm dating someone. And so I'm going to his ward a lot. And like, and he was like, cool, no worries. Like, glad to know that you're fine. But in a singles ward, like, that would never happen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Interesting. Something. Good discussion. So I wanted to hear about, you had a calling as, was it SACR meeting coordinator?
Yes, best calling ever.
And I think this is a unique approach, even for a YSA board. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that dynamic of that calling and how it worked.
So my bishop called me to be the SACR meeting coordinator, and what I went to ward council every week, and we would talk about like...
And was it just you, or was this a committee calling?
It was just me.
Okay.
And I would listen to different concerns, and we would decide on a topic as a ward council. And then the bishop always had like a running list that he would update and say like, you know, this person is new, they probably should speak soon. And some that were like, probably don't need to ask this person to speak right now. But he essentially gave me like free rein to plan sacrament meeting. And so I would take these topics and say like, okay, I actually know the ward pretty well. And I know that like person A, B, and C would be great on this topic. And so I would call them and we would talk and say like, are you comfortable speaking? And like, would you speak on this topic? And then I was in charge of reporting that to whoever made the program. And like, we just completely took that off of the bishop's responsibilities. I, of course, was still in close communication with him, but he didn't have to worry about that. And something that really worked well is every time I talked to someone, I would say, we aren't even looking for you to be like, hey, let's say the topic is the Book of Mormon. We're not trying to find people who have these like through the roof testimonies of the Book of Mormon and incredible stories. Like, we actually would love for someone to say, I've really struggled with the Book of Mormon, but here's how I've made it work in my life. Yeah. Or here's some of the things that I've been able to latch onto. And we really encourage people to be super honest and vulnerable. Nothing inappropriate, of course, but we just said like, we hope that you feel comfortable in being really honest, because there's going to be someone in the audience that will really benefit from your honesty. So that's what I did.
Nice. That's awesome. And so you were, your main role is to sort of facilitate certain topics and make sure it's staying top of mind and present in sacrament meeting and in the topics and the speakers, and you were interacting with the potential speakers and so forth.
Yeah. So I ultimately was in charge of deciding like what topics we would talk about mm-hmm. on the Sunday, who would speak and in what order, and then coordinating all of it and arranging yeah. it. And of course that meant like sometimes when sacrament meeting, when someone didn't show up, it was my fault essentially. But I was able to, I had a few friends in the ward that I knew I could always like shoot a quick text and say like, hey, you're actually the third speaker today. And they were good just because I knew them and I knew that they would be comfortable in getting yeah. a 6-minute impromptu talk. Yeah. So.
And yeah. this was after a lot of counsel and discussion, you know, you being in ward council, this wasn't that you were sitting at home thinking, let's talk about tithing this month. And then, but this would come from
no,
that
because I was in
revelatory
the,
experience.
Yeah. And just, I'm in the ward.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in Sunday school and I'm sitting there listening and thinking like, it seems like we have an issue with this, or yeah. this seems to be like, I'm in the Facebook group. I'm seeing these people's Instagram posts, like, not that I was like monitoring people and being like, clearly we are struggling with this. Just being like, oh, it seems like a lot of us are trying to figure out like Joseph Smith and historical things. So maybe we need to have someone speak about that. Maybe that would be cool to have a testimony meeting about this. And I know that President Uchtdorf gave this great talk. So maybe I should have this guy talk about that talk, and just kind of like being involved. And because I just simply, not that the bishop's not capable of doing that, that mm-hmm. I'm not saying I had any special abilities, but just I maybe had more time and like emotional energy to yeah. put into that. And it, when it worked, it was great.
Yeah. And I think this is sage advice even for, you know, bishoprics in family wards, because in a bishopric that like the sacrament meeting agenda is just like always getting away from you.
Oh,
and it's
I'm
like,
sure.
and sometimes like, oh yeah, it's my month. And oh my goodness, I haven't, you know, it's Tuesday today and I don't have speakers for Sunday. And then you're like sheepishly asking somebody, I know I'm giving a lot of time.
I got
right?
very used to the yeah. start of talks being like, well, Rosie texted me on Wednesday. I'm like, thank you.
Yep.
Everyone knows I'm bad at my calling this week. Awesome.
Oh, every bishopric has felt that for sure. Yeah. So, and to really just know that you can offload this. I mean, you still have say, your keys are still in motion here with
totally.
The decisions they're making. It's not like, you know, sacrament meeting's gone rogue because of no. Rosie. You
and
know?
He would text me and say like, hey, Rosie, I think we need to do a sacrament meeting on this. Or, mm-hmm. hey, Rosie, I just met with this new guy in the ward and he would be great to speak on this topic. Let's get that in on the awesome. Roster soon. And so we totally were just working together. And I think part of it is that like I had a great relationship with that bishop. And so he knew he could trust me and he knew that I was going to bounce things off of him. And sometimes yeah. he would, I would say, hey, heads up, I'm having this guy speak or this woman speak on this topic. And he would be like, actually...
Maybe you should call him back.
You should maybe. We do. And so, but then I was like, okay, cool. And I would just text the person and be like, actually, we're not going to do that. Change of plans. Yeah. You don't need to worry about it. Yeah. And so
there's no embarrassment. It was fine. Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Yeah. And also, I think sometimes people felt a little more comfortable saying to me, like, no.
Yeah. That's not my thing.
I don't want to do that, Rosie.
Terrified. Yeah.
Yeah. I I'm terrified. And I was totally cool with being like, okay, cool. Yeah. You don't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
So
cool. I love it. I love the approach, and it seems like you handled it well.
And when you looked up our bishopric and LDS tools, it listed three men and me.
Oh, nice. That's
awesome.
We found a loophole in the system.
In LDS tools.
So you often talk about your time in the bishopric.
I too have served in a bishopric, and it was wonderful.
Nice. Cool. Well, this has been a good discussion. Anything we're missing? Any other last encouragement or thought that you'd have for YSA bishoprics and leaders? And
I would just say, have open and honest discussions with your ward, because we all have opinions on this topic, and I'm sure they would love to share them, and be open to those, be receptive to those. Like, it could not hurt to make people feel more comfortable, that you'll never regret that, listening to people's opinions and ideas on how they would hope their YSA experience could improve. I am sure they would be willing to share. If you want some kind of your box in your ward, rather than a date box, let it be, how can the YSA experience be better for your box? And I think people would love to share.
Yeah.
Why would we not want that? So
right. Yeah. And there's this tactic, it's often in secular businesses or organizations called start, stop, continue. You have a start, stop, continue meeting where, and this could be a fifth Sunday or something, you gather everything, you say, okay, anything goes, there's safety. You can say anything you want in this meeting. I will not be upset. What are we going to stop doing? What are we going to start doing? And what do you want to continue doing?
Mm-hmm.
And just having a real conversation and giving people a chance to voice their perspective and opinion. And you may hear things like, hey, how about we stop the date box? Because that is awkward.
Yeah.
And it could help you be more self-aware as a leader, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So before I ask the last question, plug all your stuff, your book, your store, your podcast. Where do people find it? Where to send people for more, Rosie?
Yeah. So our podcast is Cue More. It means question more. And that can be found anywhere you listen to podcasts. And then my book, Model Mormon, can be ordered on my website, QNOR, which is QNOOR.
And you gotta say what QNOR means.
QNOR means Queen of Light.
Nice.
In kind of a weird roundabout way.
Is it a different language? Or?
Nor is Arabic for light, and then the Q stands for queen.
We have to discover how to say polyester onesie in Arabic and then start
the men's line.
The men's line. Anyways.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Q Nor is online. We also have a shop in Mill Creek. And
you can order online and they'll ship the dress to you.
Totally. Yeah. We ship all over the world. And then, my book is on my website and on Amazon, Desert Book, all those great places.
And your good Twitter follow.
Yes, I love my Twitter. It's at Rosemary Card.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. So the last question I have is, as you look back at your YSA experience, your experience in singledom, though it's not a different land that you live in, how has that experience being in the church, leading in that capacity in these various callings you've had, made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
I think being single, I have kind of been forced to observe the church or the gospel from a more minority standpoint. And I know what it feels like to kind of be on the outside in some ways. And so it's really helped me to think, who else is feeling this way? What other minority groups in the church or members of the LGBTQ community, who else is feeling a little bit on the fringe? And it's helped me to have an increased sense of compassion and desire to reach out to those people and say, I know it feels this way. And in some ways, maybe we are, but we're in this together. And so in that way, I feel like that's really helped me to kind of be more like Christ and more look for the one, because I know what it feels like to be the one and need someone who's kind of looking out for me.
That concludes my interview with Rosie Card. Bless her heart for allowing me to have some of these discussions, throw these questions at her. And for more interesting questions, definitely check out her podcast, the Q More podcast, and all the other resources that she puts out. She's doing a good work, and it's inspiring to see an individual like this doing so much in different areas in in the kingdom of God. You know, building a business for something as simple as temple dresses, but you know, someone's got to do that. Somebody is making a difference there, and it is Rosie. This might be a good episode to send to a YSA bishop, a bishopric member that you know, or their wives, and maybe allow them the opportunity to start that discussion. Or if you are a YSA, you know, YSA bishopric, share this with your bishopric and then plan a time to just talk about it. Go get some ice cream after bishopric meeting or whatever, invite your wives and just maybe talk about some of these points. You know, how are we, what purpose and what vision are we establishing for our ward? Or are people just defaulting to, oh, this is where we want everybody to get married? Or is there a higher purpose that you could reach for? What's the mutual respect like in your ward? And talk about that and see where you can improve it. And then just the fact of, you know, how can you garner information from the ward members, the YSAs in your ward, and better understand what you can stop doing, start doing, and continue doing. And I think you will benefit from that and will be a stronger ward after those discussions. And again, text the word LEAD to 474747, and you'll receive a link to our free PDF called 5 Steps in Getting Your Ward Ministering. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.